A Maturity of Faith Continued. Why not? This is episode number 762 of The Next Step, January 19, 2023.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vazquez. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazquez brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
When we don't fight, the future is bright in Armenia. Sounds cute, doesn't it, huh? Yeah, that came off of the Miss Universe competition when Miss Armenia was introduced in her evening gown while holding a sign that said, we have the right to live. It was interesting, especially this morning. I'm recording very early in the morning, battling a little insomnia. It's a discomfort which is nothing next to what they're going through in Armenia, in Artsakh, and in other portions of the world. It's interesting because when you suffer from diseases and difficulties, you realize that how dependent you are on the natural elements around you, especially in the cases of disease, in the cases of difficulties imposed on us by age, you know, as you age. And I'm seeing a lot of that lately, especially in my ministry, as I'm getting older too, and the people that I minister to, the complexities of getting older. I see a lot of illnesses that you wouldn't have thought about. You don't think about them earlier in life, obviously. You're not imposed by them, but also about new sufferings. And I've been struggling with this as well with families that I've been dealing with. New sufferings in the sense that, you know, we didn't have this rate of cancer that we have today. In the past, we haven't had this the issues with Alzheimer's, with dementia. And you realize that it's not a question of we haven't had them. People haven't lived this long, okay? I mean, when life expectancy was at age 60. And that wasn't that long ago, you know? Life expectancy at 60, even 70, you know? These diseases had not progressed. You know, as you live longer, you're open to new diseases. And I assume that if people got to a point where life expectancy went beyond 100, 120, even newer diseases would be recognized, right? I mean, you know, the body is not meant to go forever. At some point, it's going to break down. The cells in the body, they just can't go on forever. So there's just newer diseases as life expectancy goes up. Or I think life expectancy is an actual number. So let's say as people have figured out ways to prolong life, prolong death, let's say it that way, yeah. You prolong death, and at some point, you're going to realize that the body just can't do it anymore. And death becomes the ultimate cure for disease. I mean, at some point, when life expectancy was 30 or 40, you know, there was diseases that you couldn't cure, and that's when people would die. And then you get to 50 or 60 life expectancy. And like I said, I think life expectancy, that word is wrong. You prolong life. You prolong death. And rightly so. You want to live longer. You want to be able to live a good, healthy life. And so this struggle keeps going back and forth. And science comes along, medicine comes along, and they find newer ways of prolonging life. But what is that quality of life? Now, we've been talking about the medical side for the last minute or two. Let's talk about today, the bigger issue, because one of the reasons for my insomnia, I have to tell you, is late last night I received a call from Armenia, from a dear friend, a physician who is working in Armenia, and she was in tears. She was, I don't want to say hysterical, but her voice was echoing a sentiment that I don't think is unique to her, but it can probably be heard throughout Armenia and should be heard throughout the rest of the world. And she was talking, of course, about these 15 young kids that were just killed. They call them soldiers, but they were just, they're kids. They're 18 years old. They're just killed. And another group that were set on fire. These atrocities, which we conveniently label as man's inhumanity to man, you know, inhumane. We have nice little labels here and there, just like we do about prolonging life and as opposed to, you know, the life expectancy. It's the way you phrase it. It's the way you say it. Is it going to be something that you can live with? And that's what our language does. So I want to share with you a couple ideas, because this week has been one where we've been talking about maturity of faith. Ever since last week's podcast, I kind of echoed a sentiment that I've had for the years. And it's coming to form in many, many ways. And especially because Monday was the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King. We celebrate his birthday here in the United States. And it is something very special. Every year I've done a Martin Luther King retreat or some kind of a celebration, commemoration for the last exactly 20 years, 2003 and on. We've had the annual In Issues commemoration of Dr. King's work. And this year I had a chance to kind of sit back and listen in on some of the work that's being done within Dr. King's community. I heard a beautiful speech by Dr. Bernice King, Reverend Bernice King. And I want you to listen to it. I'll put a link on today's show notes. But she said something very important touched me. It resonated within my heart because it's something that I believe within Christianity itself. And that's basically, she says, it's time we move from the quotable king to the livable king. And that's a very powerful statement for me, especially. It's time we stop quoting Dr. King and saying, oh, he said these beautiful things, but how about living it? In other words, how do you live that faith? And something very important, which from my early childhood was a mantra that came to me from song, from thought, from sitting there and reviewing the scriptures, it's that you can't just wind up God on Sunday. It's not about just sitting at a church and praying to God if all along people are suffering. And this statement that keeps coming forward, you know, you're sitting there and you're enjoying a beautiful service in an air-conditioned church when there are people suffering, there's a disconnect there, right? There's something that's wrong, and that maturity of faith requires us to look at that. What's that wrong? And last Sunday, when we looked at the gospel message that came to us from John chapter 2 about Jesus changing the water into wine, this is kind of like a very, very important little message that kind of just evolved on that day when I just listened to that. I was talking about the maturity of faith inside of our podcast just a day earlier, and there I was in front of a congregation, and we're inside of a church, we're celebrating the Divine Liturgy in the comfort of a church, and you realize that, wait a minute, what is this? Is this some kind of a magic trick? When you are a kid, they sell you these small little chemistry sets. This was especially popular for boys, back in the 60s, 70s. And I assume that it still goes on. And these chemistry sets had little chemicals in them that made you do little experiments. You'd see some foam, you'd see some sulfur that smelled bad, and so on. But one of the tricks that you would do is you would figure out how to change a clear substance into a red substance. And not with food dyes, you could do that, but into a red substance. And the program that would come with the chemistry set was changing the water into wine. And it was a parlor trick. You would sit there in the parlor and entertain guests. And as a young boy, you know, you'd sit there and you'd do it to the parents, who'd just smile and they'd applaud and they'd kiss you for saying, "Wow, look at that. Aren't you the showman to do this?" And you basically take a little cup and you put some water in it, and then you say, "I'm going to change it into wine." And before you know it, it changes into this red substance. And it was a parlor trick. And then you read what it's based on, changing the water into wine, John chapter 2. And here is Jesus at a wedding feast, and they run out of wine. And his mother tells him, "They've run out of wine, do something." And he says, "What are you asking me about this for? What do you want me to do? My time hasn't come, and you're asking me to do a parlor trick?" But he still goes ahead and does it. And then we read right in the scripture. And by the way, this only is recorded in the Gospel of John. And if you look at John, what his sentiments were, why he sets it up, it's a very unique gospel as opposed to the synoptic, the other three. But this story comes out right at the beginning. It's the first miracle that Jesus does. And he goes and he orders them to bring these large vats filled with water. And then he asks the person, the steward, who is in charge of the wedding feast. He says, "Go ahead, taste it." And he tastes it, and it's wine. And the comment that the steward makes is, like, usually people serve the best wine first, waiting for people to get drunk. And once they are drunk, then you serve the bad wine, because they don't know the difference at that point. In other words, inside of the gospel, there's a little bit of there's a little bit of housekeeping taking place too, right? Some secrets on how to entertain your guests. But no, Jesus's wine is left for the end, and it's the best wine. And then people take this small little story and they interpret it into, well, Jesus likes, is okay with wine drinking. I have heard this countless times. You can't believe it. I shared it with you last week. I shared it with you last week when I had an actual priest of the Catholic Church. I was officiating at a wedding with him. And when, this is a true story, you know, I still can't believe that he did that. I'm trying to tell the couple at a wedding feast that, you know, Jesus changes that water into wine, using it as a metaphor for my speech to talk about the newness that can come with him. And the minute I say Jesus changed the water to wine, this priest next to me started giggling. I looked over at him. I mean, we're officiating at a wedding together. We're officiating, and there's people, there's company, and I said, "And Jesus changed the water to wine." And the guy goes, and I looked over at him, and he's like giggling and smiling, like, what is so funny here? Well, I know what's so funny. It's like, you don't expect a priest, a reverend clergy, to talk about wine. Why? Why? Because it gets you drunk? Well, the innuendo here is, of course, that Jesus changed the water into wine because he enjoyed drinking, or he wanted to experience with inebriation or something. It's all ridiculous. It's a childish way of looking at the gospel message. But we do this, don't we? We look at it in a childish manner, not as children. Children just accept it. Children just accept it. That's what accepting the kingdom as a child is. children just accept it. Yeah, the water changed into wine. But we look at it childishly. It's a childish outlook, you know, like, ha, 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 ha. He made wine, and that wine is supposed to serve to get people drunk, and therefore Jesus was condoning drinking and alcoholism. You're laughing right now, but believe it or not, people believe this. How many times, and I guarantee you, go and talk to your priest, you will find that this answer comes out over and over. How many times people have come and offered you a drink, a glass of wine as a priest, and they nudge you and they wink you at you and they say, here you go, Father, here's a glass of wine. You know, Jesus drank wine. What? Really? That's why I'm going to drink this glass of wine? They acted in such a way that if they hadn't told me this, if they didn't give me this, it wouldn't be okay. Now it's okay to drink wine because Jesus, you know, drank wine. It's so ridiculous. It's childish, isn't it? And this is where I challenged people last week. And I've been doing it all week. If you've been listening to the daily messages that I've been putting up on Epostle, it's sort of evolving from one step to the next step. It's been remarkable awakening for me how that maturity of faith is so important. And it's important to recognize that what Jesus does is he gives us a mature way of looking at our lives. It's not about the wine. It's not a parlor trick. It's about getting the best. It's about getting the best when you trust God. It's about getting the best when Jesus touches it. You're getting the better wine. Actually, the whole point of that story is summarized in what the steward said. Not in anything else. Not in even the action that Jesus took. It's in what the steward said. Everyone serves the best first. You save the best for last. And when is that best given to you? It's given if you can endure, if you can get through it. That best is there. So last night I get a call from my friend. She's in Armenia, and she tells me about these horrible, horrible atrocities they're taking. She's on the verge of hysteria and what's going on. And I struggled with this all night. I struggled with it, that what do I do? Because it's almost like your hands are tied. And combine this now with what Reverend King said just a few days earlier. She says it's time we stop quoting King and living King. And we talk about Dr. King, and we talk about the nonviolent revolution that she did, and we talk a good talk about it because we can find ways of doing it, but we're still dealing with this kind of inhumane action in the world. And, you know, the statement that was said at the Miss Universe pageant, when we don't fight, the future is bright in Armenia. That's something in 2014. You can go listen to my earlier podcast. 2014, it's exactly the sentiment I had the first time that I had returned back to Armenia since my seminary days. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking out. It's the night before I'm heading back to America. And I'm looking out on the Araratyan plain. I'm looking out of the window and I just see this beautiful, beautiful country there. And I'm sitting there and saying, you know, the only thing this country needs, by the way, I had just attended a tech conference that year, and just saw some brilliant, brilliant minds, young kids. And I just thought to myself, you know, all this country really needs is peace. I say it as if it's something easy, right? All it needs is peace. If they could live in peace, they could do anything. But where does that peace start from? When you've got neighbors all around you whose only intent is your annihilation. Their only reason for existing seems to be that they want you out of the picture. They want you to leave. So how do you reconcile? Where do you come in with your maturity of faith there? All right, let's take a break right now. And we play a song every week. Something to kind of settle down and digest and then move on to the second portion of today's show. David Crosby passed away today at age 81, a giant in the music world, especially to people like me, my age, my generation, the founder of the Byrds, Buffalo Springfield. Of course, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, beautiful voice, in many ways, a connection for me. His voice was silenced today. Here's today's song.
As we watch you die, all we can do is echo your anguish cries. Stare as all human feelings die. We are leaving, you don't need sister, then by the hand, lead her away from this foreign land, far away where we might laugh again. We are leaving, you don't need
us.
scarf on my shoulder. Guess I'll set a course and go.
Wooden Ships. Thought we'd do something a little bit different than the usual fare. Crosby, Stills, and Nash. David Crosby passing away today at age 81. And actually, the background on this song is that it was written actually by Stephen Stills and David Crosby, and along with, of all people, Paul Cantor from Jefferson Airplane or Jefferson Starship. And, yeah, he was the roommate of David Crosby. So there's some background to it. But it's one of my favorites. And like I said, I wanted to do something a little bit different than what you're accustomed to hear. Just today at lunch, a gentleman, he was from Armenia, a younger guy, and he was saying what was the – he had heard about the 60s and the 70s. And he said, what were the social issues? And we were talking about the war, about Vietnam and the fear of war, what can happen, especially through nuclear annihilation. And we used to live through a time where we would have drills, regular drills, in school. And this song, Wooden Ships, is about, you know, it's generally interpreted as the aftermath of a nuclear holocaust, what would happen. It was things that people were worried about, people were writing songs about, but indeed a very, very beautiful song. And big loss, David Crosby. He just really knew how to harmonize and put it together. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Yeah. It's one less voice now, one voice that will never be heard again. And indeed, it was a very special and beautiful voice. May he rest in peace. So we are talking about maturity of faith, continuing on a theme that we started off this year, 2023, with. How do we come to that mature faith where it's not just a parlor trick that you're doing, or just looking at Jesus as the source of wonderful miracles, but no application to life? And it comes down to some basic mantras that I've had in my life. Comes to me from the music, from the culture I started off with, but most importantly comes to me from the Holy Scriptures that I studied, the ones that I studied. And this is really important, because we're not talking about some kind of mythology. And a lot of times when you look at scriptures and the way they look at scriptures, they read them as myths, yeah. Even stories that people would take offense if you called them myths, whether it's the Garden of Eden, Noah's Ark, but they are presented. Listen really carefully before you start writing me and say they're not myths. I'm saying they are read as myths, mythically. In other words, you don't put yourself inside of those. And when I look at the words of Jesus, every word of Jesus comes alive. Why? Because he puts himself, he puts all of us inside of those words. When you're sitting there with him and the woman is drawing water and she's a Samaritan who's been completely outcast, you are there with him. You're understanding his compassion and his love to take you in. When he's washing the feet of the disciples, you're realizing what is going on here. I mean, here's the creator. Here is the hands that created from the earth, created humans. And then those same hands were now washing off that earth, washing off that dirt from these feet. And that analogy is not mine. I don't want to take credit for it because it's so beautiful. It comes from St. Nerses Snorali, who goes through that entire Holy Week in his hymn, Aisor Anjar. But it is awakening. And that's what St. Nerses Snorali does for me. He makes that connection. And that's what I need to do. That's what we all need to do. Make that connection with our lives. There are people dying right now. There are people that were subjected to inhumane activities. And I'm talking about a very small group that takes place in Artsakh. But look what's going on in Ukraine. And basically the world is quiet about it. The world is not saying anything about it. Oh, yeah, yeah, they write these nice little op-eds. You sit around and you talk about how bad it is. You drink coffee over it. But at the end, there's people dying. And this is something that I can't reconcile. I can't even reconcile that I sit in a church, a nice air-conditioned church, and celebrate this divine liturgy. But as I said, the maturity level is what's important. And that's what came about this week, because I'm realizing in that repetition of that divine liturgy is this opportunity to connect. When I look at Jesus and I look at the message that he's giving, and this is something that's run through all of Armadoxy. I've shared this with you from day one when we started. You're not connecting with 2,000 years ago. You need to make that connection. When you understand Jesus coming to us from the beginning of time. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. You're realizing that that Word is what's talking to you right now. And so you are connecting with the beginning of universe. You know, we have these creeds in our church, whether it's the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed in the Catholic or the Western churches. You have the Baptismal Creed. And we always talk about Jesus, his person. We talk about who he was. Born of the Virgin, he lived and suffered under Pontius Pilate, and he was crucified, and he resurrected, and is sitting at the right hand of God the Father. And we go through this description of his life. The one thing that we always forget about is his message. We never say in our creeds, we don't say, and we believe in his message. We believe that Jesus was born from the Holy Virgin Mary. We believe that he suffered. We believe he was crucified. We believe that he resurrected. We believe that he's sitting at the right hand of the Father. But where do we say about, we believe in what he stood for? We believe in the message that he pronounced. And it's obvious. There was no need for that. Where there was no need to put that into a creed. Because the bigger issues at the time these creeds were developed were about the person of Jesus. You were basically talking inside of a homogenous group of people. So the bishop that was in Armenia, that was sitting there in Armenia, knew that the people there were listening to the message that was coming out of the churches that was being evangelized in the area. And so they were getting that message. And now what we needed to do in the creeds was solidify who is this Jesus who is telling us this. Okay, so the creeds were developed for another purpose. But today, as we recite those creeds, I'm going to use this word, really, it's intentional. I'm not going to say omitted. I'm going to say we have forgotten. They weren't omitted intentionally. It's just that there was no need. The creeds were formed to say who Jesus was. Who do I believe Jesus is? These are the things that he did. But when I talk today about what I believe, I need to include in there also that I believe in Jesus's message. I believe in the love that he talked about. I believed in everything that he said. And when you start doing this, what happens is all of a sudden you realize that you have a more morally clear ground on which to stand. You see, one of the big problems we have with religions and why we don't get along and this idea of intolerance is we compare the people. We compare the people. And we say, well, my Jesus is better than your Muhammad. Your Muhammad is better than your Gautama. And your Gautama is better than the Vishnu. And we start comparing these leaders of the churches, so to speak. Leaders of the faith, okay? Instead of listening very carefully, the message that Jesus Christ had and has today is what sets him apart. There isn't anybody else who talks about the sacrificial love the way Jesus spoke about and then demonstrated. There isn't anybody. The message of Christ is unique. It's singular. And once you start studying that message, you realize it connects you not with Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. It connects you with the beginning of time. It goes back to the beginning of time. Now, once you make that connection, what happens all of a sudden? Then you have your Jesus connected to the divinity. That Jesus is the divine. It's not because he was born in Jerusalem. It's not because, or Bethlehem. It's not because he's from the line of David or anything like that. It's because he's speaking the truth that comes to us from the beginning, that comes to us from the beginning of all creation. Because why? He was there. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. All things were created by him. That's it. That's who's talking to us. That's whose message is coming to us. Now, if you've got that, if you've got that understanding, now we're looking at life and we're looking at the issues in life a little bit differently. And you start realizing that, hey, what I'm doing here has to matter. I can't just be standing here. Yesterday was Armenian Christmas in Jerusalem. I know. You're saying, wait, didn't you guys celebrate on January 6th? Yes, we did then. In Jerusalem, they go by the old calendar, the Julian calendar. And you know what? It's just a matter of tradition because they've always done it that way. That's how they're going to do it. And so you've got the Patriarch of Jerusalem. And, you know, I'm going to make up a scorecard just so people know who these people are. You've got the Patriarch of Jerusalem, who is entertaining the Patriarch from Constantinople, or today Istanbul. He has journeyed with a group of pilgrims and pilgrims from America and different places in the world. They have gone to Jerusalem on January 19th, 18th to 19th, where the Patriarch himself goes down to Bethlehem, and they celebrate the Divine Liturgy at the site where Jesus Christ was born. This is beautiful. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful commemoration. It's a beautiful way of commemorating. But how do you take those words that he spoke and apply them to our life today? How do you make that connection? And if you can't make that connection, you've got a problem there. You've got a problem because you've basically got this faith that is disconnected from reality. And Christ, the reason he came was to connect us to reality. To say it's not all about something in the sky. It's about the here and now, right now. The kingdom of God is right now. It's happening right now. John the Baptist said that earlier. He said, prepare yourselves. The Lord is coming. But the Lord has come. The kingdom has been enacted. And we are all one in Christ Jesus. And so it's very important for me. And I need to say this today because I'm shaken up. Like I said, I haven't slept all night because of this call about what's going on in Armenia. That right now, more than ever, we have to be solid in our faith. That faith that says that we have to move to action. That action cannot be with more weapons, cannot be with more guns. I just heard this woman, Sprott, I'm going to put her Instagram or Facebook on today's show notes. You need to have some knowledge of Armenian to listen to her. She's somebody who came from a very, who came from the cults, okay? And she was had a checkered past. She admits this. And she still does. She's an entertainer. I don't know exactly her story. I've only heard about her because last year what she did is she came over to the diocese and she looked for a priest to explain to her what Christianity was about. And when she couldn't find someone like that because everyone was putting her off, or there was a bunch of reasons. She went wild. She has a fan base of, I think it's 45,000. I just looked her up a couple days ago because I listened to this incredible rant that she gave. And 45,000 followers, Armenian young lady. And she came and she said, you know, I'm not getting any substance. I'm not getting any substance from the Armenian church. And a gentleman named Haig Madoyan, who we are very proud of. I mean, he's an incredible talent, incredibly knowledgeable man of faith who is at the Western Diocese. He teaches the Bible studies. He invited her to come to one of the studies. And this woman had a conversion. This woman has had a conversion to the point that her latest rant to her 45,000 followers is, listen, if you're Armenian and you're Christian, you need to pray for Aliyev. Did you hear that right? You need to pray for Aliyev. It's kind of weird to say it, right? Aliyev, of course, is the president of Azerbaijan, the people who are killing the Armenians. And she goes on to say, you need to pray for him, you need to pray for me, you need to pray for others, because Jesus says, pray for your enemies, and we're not doing that. And it was a very, very intense speech. Like I said, you need to, it's in the Armenian language. You have to have some, and not only Armenian language, but you have to be able to decipher through some of the street language too. But it was very important for me to hear this, because I realized that there is an answer, and that answer we have, but it requires a seriousness and maturity of faith. And so I'm going to go back. I'm going to make that point. I said it last week. We need to call this the year of maturity, the year of maturity of faith. Stop looking at it as a coloring book of different ideas of God. We've seen that, you know, Sunday school. You put your kid into Sunday school because you don't want your kid to bother you in church. And in that Sunday school, they give them a nice coloring book. And here's a picture of Jesus. You make sure that, you know, you get the hair color right. And when somebody makes his hair color orange, they say, yeah, that's okay. But you know what, honey? Here's some brown crayon and so on and so on. Yeah, that's nice. But unfortunately, a lot of us get stuck in that Sunday school room. And that's how we perceive Christianity. And at some point, we need to have a more mature understanding. When St. Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, but when I became an adult, I put away my childish ways. That's the call to a maturity of faith. That's the call to understand that our faith is not about coloring books. It's not about Sunday school classrooms. It's about understanding that I'm living inside of a real world where there is pain, there is suffering, there is war, there's intolerance, there's misunderstanding. But I need to become that agent. I need to be that person that applies my faith. And what is that faith? It's the message of Jesus Christ. It's the message that he gives. And what is that message? Oh, well, start off. Read the Sermon on the Mount. Read the Sermon on the Mount. Starts off in Matthew chapter 5 through 7, inclusive. There you go. You know, in fact, I tell people that. I tell when people say, I want to read the Bible, you know, I tell them, please don't start off with the Old Testament. You know, don't. Start off with the New Testament. And if you want to really start off even more intensely, start off with Matthew chapter 5 through 7 to understand what you're going to get into in a moment. To understand, this is the message right there, the Sermon on the Mount. But the message is so much more than those printed words. It's a message that you can live, and we need to live. It's just as Reverend King said, talking about her father's work. He says, we've got to get away from quoting to living king. The quotable king has to turn into the living king. And it's exactly what we're talking about here. The quotable Jesus. All the things that we say about Jesus now has to turn into life. They seem impossible, but they need to turn into life. When Jesus says, "You have heard an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, love your enemy. Pray for those who persecute you." Do you realize what an incredible call that is? How wild it is? How different it is from everybody else's call? You've heard an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. That sets him apart. That's the connection to the beginning. That's the connection that makes him divine and why he's set apart from everybody else. Immaturity of faith.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Epostle.net is the voice and expansion of In His Shoes Ministry. We are committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at either the inhisshoes.org website or epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you all of you for all of your support, your love, your kind words, notes, and most importantly, thank you for your prayers on keeping this podcast at a good level of people. I really, really appreciate everything that you all do. I want to let you know that I will be at the St. Gregory Armenian Church. Right now, it looks like it's indefinite. Don't know how long, but I'll be there for at least the next few weeks. And what makes that very special is that I think out of all the churches, they have the best they have the best electronic setup. So you are able to join me Sunday mornings. That's, of course, I'm in California, so you have to look up Pacific time. Wherever you are, it's really easy. You just go into the Google search box and say, what time is it in California? And then figure it all out. Anyway, we do start at 10:30 in the morning, Sunday morning, California time. And I would love it if you joined us and you get to see the entire beautiful divine liturgy, the Holy Badarak, and get a message. And the other thing that's kind of nice about the Pasadena Church is not only do they stream it, and it's a really nice stream with three different cameras and operated by a human being. Can you believe that? Not automated. It's a real live person putting it all together. But the other nice thing is that it's readily available. Just it's right on YouTube, and it's also on Facebook. Just go to YouTube at the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena, and watch it. Watch it. You can watch it live, and of course, right afterwards, it does get archived on their website. So that's really a nice way for me to stay in touch with all of you. There is a lot going on, and we invite you to go to epostle.net. That's apostle with an E, apostolic evangelism. For an electronic and expanding universe. So it's very easy to remember. Go there because every day there is a new daily message, and they're very short. They're, 3 to 5 minutes long. You get to start off your day in a very happy, upbeat way. So those messages are for there for your consumption. And of course, this next step gets produced on epostle.net, where you can find not only this episode of The Next Step, but all of them from the beginning of time. So spend some time and going through the archives, seeing what we got. It is a really action-packed website, and I'm very proud of it.
Epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.
Okay, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. A big shout-out, Gung Ho Fa Choi. It happens to be the Lunar New Year, and we correct those who say Chinese New Year's because Chinese is one of many cultures that celebrate the Lunar New Year. I think it's the Year of the Rabbit, if I'm not mistaken. But if you get a chance, go out there. I won't be going out there. The last time we went to a Chinatown celebration. Oh man, my ears had it with all the firecrackers. But it is something exciting, especially when you're raising three sons, just to get out there and see all that excitement and the firecrackers being thrown right and left. Anyway, if you can get out to a Lunar New Year event, a Chinatown event, highly recommend it. You have to do that at least once in a lifetime, okay? Just because I can't take it with my ears. Don't listen to me. Go and do that. Okay, that does it for today's show. On behalf of the wonderful team who put this together, namely my producer Susie and myself, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.
Off by one top, there's it.